Let's see, do we have Will, today is the March 11th, 2020 meeting of the TOC. Farheen is our scribe. She has started the recording if no one objects. To the recording, if you do, we can please let us know. We'll go ahead and start the roll call. I'm Jack Murray from AT&T. Jinri, are you there? I don't see him. David, I don't see. Masafumi-san, I don't see. William, I don't see. And Vishwa, I don't see. So today will not be an official voting session. We have not met quorum, but we will continue the meeting for the benefit of the community, and we can address items as we go. We will not review minutes today because we can't vote on them, so we'll push that off to a subsequent meeting. Today's agenda, does anyone have anything that needs to be added to today's agenda? Okay.
Jack, maybe a quick discussion on Viavi, if it's not on the agenda already, I think.
All right. Let's see, it should be under old business. We've discussed it a few times. It should still be on the list. All right, we'll definitely do it under old business because we've been discussing it. Okay, anyone else? Okay, again, votes and approvals. Okay, so there's not enough people here to have a vote, but I think there is some useful conversation that we can have. Member of the community, Chris. Let's see, is Chris on? I don't know if Chris was able to join today. But Ray Rose raised the point about, Chris Lott raised the point about adding contributors. Contributor management outside of the initial forming of the project is managed by the other contributors in that project. So when we create a new repo or a new project, we ask that they include the initial contributor list. And once the TOC approves that, then the project is self-managing for contributors. And that's covered in our, I believe it's covered in our ORAN charter, page 2, a contributor may be a committer by majority vote of existing committers. A committer may be removed by other committers. So there does not need to be a formal vote for adding a committer, deleting a committer, or managing committers by the TOC. So, where we have here that therefore the additional committers, and there's a list, Maddie, this can be done within the project itself. It still has to be posted as a request and voted on in the public email.
So would that be sent to the main mailing list then? Okay.
So people are aware of what's going on, but the only voters on it are the other committers.
Of these KPI-1 repo only?
So there's the PTL is a committer across all the projects, right?
Yes.
And then the other committers in that repo, does anyone have any other input on how this is done? If Chris was on or if someone else was familiar with best practices in other projects. We just happen to have a lot of repos. Generally, you know, when we create a new repo, we should have at least one or two committers identified to create the repo. But I would say...
Yeah, there should be like about three committers in addition to me for this repo. So
you should vote within that repo.
Okay, publicly in the mailing list. Okay, I will do that.
And that goes for all projects once they're formed. The reason that the TOC is involved in initial forming is there's a cost and a you know, management issue associated with how we organize the projects and the repos. But once that's done, then the people committing the code should self-regulate their communities. Does anyone have any questions or concerns about that guidance? Okay. That should help speed things along for some of the activities. So there's no right. So Alex, who's asking for a committer, that should also follow that same. So all these requests for committers should collapse to that same procedure, and that will speed things along and remove them from the task for the TOC.
Sounds good.
So for marketing, you know, we can clean these up. For those who haven't heard, ONES has been canceled. So that's no longer of a concern for now.
Well, one other piece of information, Jack, and this is Tracy, is our proposal for the panel discussion was accepted, and it is on the calendar. I think ONAS is pushed out to September, August, September.
Okay.
And we're thinking that will be the time when we would also do the POC and the Plug Fest with OSC Bronze, since we already have a spot on the program, and we should have OSC and ONAP members at that event. You know, assuming coronavirus blows away, and I'm cautiously optimistic it will by then.
Okay, we'll keep that on the plan then. We'll just change it for a fall event now, and we'll track and see how it goes.
So Tracy, just a quick question, Martin, here. So that means I will update here the PlugFest and the schedule for June also to September, or shall we keep the June time?
And Martin, that's a good question. I brought that up during the ORAN Working Group 1 meeting yesterday evening.
Okay.
And nobody said no, but I want to wait until we get an official yes.
Okay, thanks. Thanks.
We have to get, we have to coordinate with OTIC, the ORAN Testing and Integration Centers in Asia and Europe.
Excellent. That's why I'm asking. Yeah. Okay, thanks.
Okay. So let's get on to last week. We kind of skipped the open business. We're going to try to go through this quick because we still have some PTLs to review some of the projects with. We didn't get through them all last week. So we'll try to get through this quickly. Ritwick, do you have some update with Viavi? I see some of the Viavi team.
Yeah, I think Yang Wei is there. I don't know if Nick Smith is also there. They said they'll join. You had a proposal. Do you guys want to just briefly maybe verbalize it, or you want to show the slides, Yang Wei or Nick?
This is
and just tell us briefly what the proposal is. Yeah.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Hey, sorry about that. So my colleague, Ken, he will basically be presenting a set of slides, right? We've actually prepared for this meeting. So Ken, are you with us? Can you hear us?
Yeah, I can hear you.
All right, do you want to share your screens?
Sure.
Thank you.
Are you able to now see that?
Yes.
Great. So essentially, we put together a very short slide deck just talking about one of our products, which is the VU Viavi DRAN emulation. And essentially, the slide deck is focused around the technical aspects of enabling some validation of your dynamic traffic steering use cases and verification. A few layers of
okay, it is about integrating and testing with L1, right?
Essentially it's valid the direct focus is validation of the interface to the E2 simulator and for the near
so that time. I have put it in the August release, if I remember correctly. I have put 4cc.
Sorry, I didn't completely follow the question.
Yeah, I did.
I think Sachin is speaking.
Yes, hello.
Yes.
No, I think you're not on mute, so we could hear your conversation, Sachin. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So there's a few, I guess, configurations that'll be of interest to the community. As your project progresses, this is sort of the most all-encompassing test, which essentially we have a RF test interface, which is our TM500, which can basically test the complete chain of the ORU, ODU, and OCU, along with an emulated core. So that is essentially available once you have all the various components, and they would be working with the real-time RIC. And the UE emulator essentially is keeping a lot of UE-level statistics, which could be compared to the feeds that you're getting out of the E2 interfaces. The next earlier, capability that you would be able to access is something that we call our ORAN front haul test interface. And essentially that is building on top of that same TM500 UE emulator, but it is now basically replacing the ORU subsystem and delivering traffic directly to the DU via the front haul interface. And once again, same kind of statistics being collected by the UE stack as you're applying traffic to the DU and the CU with the core, the simulated core on the other side. So then in that scenario, when you've got both the DU and the CU in place, you can fully load those entities. And then the focus of the presentation here is essentially the first stage setup for what we understand you want to test during the bronze release is essentially the UE emulator applications running via a ODU emulator that's now replacing the RU and the DU into a CU that's under test. And it's paired with a VRAN emulator, which is emulating the master eNode Bs for the NSA type setup. And so this would allow you to test an OCU in isolation. And, you know, and we're talking about interfacing that ODU emulator with the E2 simulator, which via, you know, some defined API, which is still work in progress. So as I mentioned, this is a sort of a technical discussion. There's some parallel business discussions going on at the same time on another track. So this is basically the high level view of the interfaces and so on. So it's support for, you know, both the control and user planes of the F1 into the CU, and then you've basically got the UE stacks and the components of the DU being represented inside of the ODU emulator. Is there any questions here?
All right. Well, thank you for providing that information. I think the key aspect here is for, you know, the OSC community, our challenge is how do we, you know, evolve from where we're at to a, you know, really functional system, and how do we determine that the functionality has been implemented as correctly as we can. And it's hard when every piece is under construction. So an environment like this can make a big impact on our progress. So that's the interest that I've received from several members of the community.
Okay, I've got a couple of remaining slides that go into more detail on that, on sort of the implementation. So essentially the product is basically delivers, you know, large scale ODU emulation. So you can do very large numbers of DU nodes and essentially deliver the traffic equivalent to a very large population of UEs. And essentially we extend the capabilities of the TM500 UE stack and our real applications that run on that platform into this, you know, sort of multi DU and tens of thousands of UEs into that environment, where we're, you know, we essentially got the many UE stacks here running on the side, and then we're emulating, you know, large numbers of DUs into the CU traffic. So the, you know, and essentially what we've done is eliminated sort of the baseband aspects of the UE side, since we're emulating the complete UE stack and the DU. So that enables the very high levels of capacity that we're able to achieve, but still enabling things like, you know, channel modeling and so on, as they can be built into the simulation and running sort of the real world applications that our TerraVM product line provide. So you can run various kinds of traffic, including sort of custom flow type traffic. So if you've got an application you want to model, we have a capability to do that. So this is basically what's in the green box here is essentially what's available already and would be available for the bronze release testing, and then things that that we would need to add in at a later date, which it's unclear at the moment if all of these things can be made available for the bronze release test, is essentially, setting up an actual E2 or some kind of an E2-like interface, and then what aspects of the handling of the RIC subscription requests and so on. So I think we wanted to introduce the basic concepts, and then we would continue to work with the team on fleshing out the additional requirements needed and to see if those could be handled for your release. And then so there in some of the we've had a number of discussions with AT&T and Samsung around the actual KPIs and the interface. So thank you very much to those teams for providing that insight and helping to contribute to what was interesting to the community here to see, have a first pass at what you might want to have, added to the capability in order to support your testing. So essentially there was a couple of KPIs that were highlighted as sort of the starting point that would start to provide value through those meetings with AT&T and Samsung. And those were essentially the PDCP uplink and downlink throughputs, so per slice and 5QI, and then the PRB usage per slice and 5QI. So I wanted to give a bit of an update on sort of where those sit in our current implementation. So so there's obviously have to be some additions made to handle the formatting and so on of the data being passed into your simulator. But right at the moment, we currently are already tracking PDCP uplink and downlink throughput in the DU. So that would be an exercise in being able to deliver that to your interface. And we've had a look at it and it looks adding it partitioning it down to UE level granularity looks quite reasonable and it looks to be a very feasible enhancement. The numbers here essentially were sort of the priorities of the KPIs that we were working with. So the existing ones and then extensions into the UE level diagrams. And that's the indication of these plus signs is that those are quite feasible to add in. The downlink PRB usage, we're not currently tracking, but that also looks to be quite feasible, both at the DU level and being able to provide that granularity down to the UE level. And then there was an extension, which was the RRC measurement report contents being passed up. That's one that we're still looking into as to how we would go about that. I think that was the third priority, as it was currently not supported inside of the KPI Mon architecture at the moment. So I just wanted to outline sort of next steps is effectively to align with AT&T and Samsung and the rest of the community here too, regarding the reporting of these indications from the emulator through to the E2 simulator. So those that effectively is defining the interface that we need to support in order to report that data and then to confirm the final set of KPIs that would be needed to support your testing. Thanks. Thank you very much for the opportunity to present the material. If there's any questions.
Hey, Ken, this is Q. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Hey, so Ken, if you go back right to slide number 4, if you can, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's right, this one here. So I'm wondering whether Jack's question is actually in relation to, for example, right now, right, if we basically have the ODU emulator, and I think this is what we discussed, that can we as well emulate the OCU for the immediate term, just so that we can have the ODU emulator up and running and producing stats, right, feeding the E2 simulator?
Yeah, we currently... Sorry, Jack, I didn't realize that was the question. Currently, we don't have an OCU emulator, but we have had some discussions with your team about this, and we do have some internal sort of R&D test capability that may fit in that. At least it would provide a peer for the DU to start generating traffic into, that we'd be able to provide some statistics. So that's something. We do have plans on the roadmap to release a product like this, but it's not out there yet. But like I said, we do have some capability that we may be able to leverage. So that's something that's still being discussed with your team members as to how we might be able to do that to give you a ability to generate some traffic into the E2 simulator without you even needing the CU to be present.
All right. Thank you. Does anyone else have any questions?
Yes, John Keeney here. I was wondering if I could, I've asked a couple of times, so I was wondering if there was any update. Is there any mention of support for O1 observability from any of these functions? Without O1 observability, we can't do any, basically, OAM, SMO, or non-real-time RIC level use case. So basically, it won't be a full stack integration environment. So I was wondering if any comments or feedback, or is that correct, or am I do I have the wrong end of the stick here?
I think the products have some ONM capabilities. I don't know if they're O1 compatible yet, but I'm sure some OM interface must be there in each of these boxes, right, Ken?
Yeah, that's something we could certainly look at. I haven't heard that specific request. I haven't been on these calls a lot, so that's something I can take away and have a look at. If there's the specific interface, I'm not sure about, but potentially being able to share the types of data likely is feasible. So let me take that away as an action to report back on.
Yeah, even yes. We'd be looking at counters, even rudimentary counters, cell trace, UE trace, MDT trace, those kind of, that kind of data, I think would be absolutely necessary for kind of an end-to-end, full stack integration test, I think.
Yeah, and so we maintain a large number of statistics and so on inside the product that are generally streamed to logs and stuff like that. So the data is there. It would be a matter of delivering, the KPIs of interest to you. So let me take that away as an action to
okay.
Yeah. So this is cool from the RV Solutions, right? Hey, may I know who was that speaking?
This is John Keeney, the PTL non-real-time RIC.
Hey, John. Hi. So, John, I'm not sure whether previously I've actually seen an email from yourself, right? That was actually sent through the email reflector. Is it yourself who sent this question across the reflector?
Yes, probably, yeah.
All right. Hey, so, John, I suggest, something we probably will need your help, and I see Tracy on the call as well, is that, obviously... Yeah, in our products, right, we are planning to support the O1 interface, given that we are basically emulating the ORAN network functions. We want to make sure that our network functions, which are basically emulated, can actually be supporting the management interfaces. So for example, for the ORU emulator that we are basically we have delivered to the market and our customers today, where we basically support the working group for a M-Plane management plane protocols. And to at least our understanding, for obviously we're not as deep as yourself, right, and Tracy and potentially others in this meeting, O1 is not fully finalized yet, for example, for the DU and for the CU and for the ORU, I think right now working group 4 is still in the process of trying to see, you know, what will be needed to switch over to O1 from working group 4 management plane. So in short, I'm wondering whether is it possible to have a call with yourself, right, John, to potentially look at, based on the current state of O1 standardization and obviously what OSC is trying to do here, and then review what, you know, VRV can potentially provide, Troy, as Ken mentioned, in incremental steps. Because this is, you know, exactly this account style that we want to work or collaborate with the rest of the team here.
Okay.
And not so, yeah, for everything to be finalized.
Hey, yeah, Koo, are you in, you're in Texas, right?
I'm actually quite far away from Texas. I'm based in Singapore.
Okay. I don't know why I thought you definitely don't have a Texas accent.
I know.
Okay, we'll find a time that you don't have to stay up all night.
Yeah, no problem. So Tracy, we discussed this in the TFG meeting as well. So I think with yourself and John, you know, you can give us some guidance around how to go about doing this.
Yeah, yep, and we probably need to include Alex, right,
yeah,
John?
And Martin as well, yeah. Please. Well, I was just wondering, in terms of the, you know, is there any kind of 3GPP like OEM observability? It would be fairly similar, I would imagine.
Very similar, right? We're yeah. That's one of our objectives.
That's the idea.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. So I think in that meeting, we'll probably get prepared, Ken, right, for some information that we can share for what counters do we actually expose. And then, yeah, like you said, we basically keep, right, you know, a variety of stats, right, and our customers basically use them for troubleshooting, debugging, and making sure that all the KPIs, spec counters, right, are basically available to review any performance problems and stuff like that for analysis. So once we get into the details in the breakout call, I believe we should be able to maybe figure out the gaps and potentially what can be used, right, based on what we've actually implemented today.
Okay.
So,
great, thanks.
Yeah.
At this point, I'll kind of cut it off here. I think we've, you know, raised the item. Conversations can continue. We haven't made a final decision if we can, you know, incorporate this. There are some financial considerations that need to be discussed as well. So this is a continuing point of discussion. You know, really the community is typically, you know, everybody brings their contributions. But, you know, Viavi has expressed that there is some financial considerations they need for us to use that. We'll continue those discussions offline from here and figure out if there's a viable path here.
And Jack, one last thing. I'd stay away from the finances, but I think there is an expectation that the Open RAN Alliance testing and integration centers, at least the, you know, and it, there's a consistency across North America, Europe, and Asia. We're bringing together public research centers, universities, equipment vendor laboratories, as well as operator laboratories. And there is the expectation that there will be donations. I don't want to sound like I'm begging or mooching, but just wanted to put that out there.
Yeah, that is an important strategy of the ORAN Alliance, really looking at how and who are interoperable and how we define what interoperability is and who can play a important role in ORAN interoperability. ORAN Alliance wants to, you know, have a program in place where they manage that. So thank you, Tracy. You know, we're just a partner to some of that, as well as some of our needs.
And AT&T donated a significant amount of equipment already, as have numerous other ORAN members.
Great point. All right, let's move on. We're at the 8:40 mark. Let's look for items here. Is there anything out of the open items that people have a significant item they want to raise at this point? If not, I was going to move down to some of the project status that we didn't get to last week. Okay. Sachin, are you on today?
Yes.
Okay, so we're looking for an update, you know, on the ODU high. How, you know, what progress was made in the first dev cycle? And are there any outstanding items? And how are you tracking progress?
Right. So we identified around 7 for the launch, and out of that, one effect we have just completed. So that's the progress on APEX front. We have the user stories in back on the and we had a quick discussion on the status of each of them in our last RSTA call. So they can, all of us for there. So we just had a, you know, detailed view on where we are, what we are working.
It's very hard to hear you. I don't know if you can get closer to the mic, but it's a little choppy.
I'm sorry. So is it better now?
Much better.
All right. So I said we had a meeting with the RSTA meeting last time where we discussed the status in details. But in general, we have around 7 epics where we are targeting complete 1 epic, in this month. So that's where we are from a status perspective. We have user stories defined in Jira and epics identified there. So we are tracking it through that. There are some more tasks to be defined, which will happen as we take up the activity and do a due diligence on what is required and things like that. So that is how we are today.
Okay.
We have already taken up the E2 side of development based on the draft specification. But I think we are expecting the E2 AP draft to be available and released from the working group perspective, so that we are all on the same page when we release the release branch.
All right, if you can go into this, into the bronze release status under the release and update where you're at the end of dev cycle 1, that would be helpful to capture that. Is there any major outstanding issues that's a blocker for you that you need addressed?
Not really. The only thing is that we still don't have a clarity on the way we do the integration testing. I think
there was a meeting that was supposed to happen with Viavi, with other PTLs who are affected, like ODU Low and OCU. So looking forward for that meeting to see how best we can have the integration setup available, because that will be one blocker for the demonstration of the code and testing, basically, the both ways.
Right. That's you raised a good point here about the integration and test coordination. I think this is a topic that we need to add to the agenda, that we need to talk about in more detail. I think every project should make sure they have a person designated to be part of the integration and test. I think there is a table that Lijing has pointed me at in the past of the contact points, but we're also looking for more participation in the integration and test team. It can't do its job with one or two people. Most companies here really should be considering bringing somebody to that team to make sure that we address all the items. Otherwise, we're not going to be able to do much if everyone just stands around and looks for someone else to do it. This is a community effort. And so getting participation in that, especially a project that has some low-level components, is critical to the success of the overall community. All right. Anyone have any questions for Sasha?
Actually, okay. This is Jimmy from Audio Low Project. Actually, as Sachin mentioned, it's not a question. Just ask maybe the Jack and Richard all these opinions. So actually, in different meetings, we have different discussion about the integration with the Audio Low, Audio High, and maybe OCU. So from our perspective, maybe as Sachin listed in the last line, we have some dependency about the ORU simulator and the OCU simulator as well, to maybe to finish the ODU integration. So I'm wondering that, I just saw the VRA present their test equipment plan. So I didn't saw the OCU as one test equipment as a product. So actually, integration of the test equipment and test environment, and where it is, and what are the dependencies.
So on the OCU, this is Ken Trudgeon speaking here. On the OCU emulation, this is something that's in basically in our roadmap. But it's not something that we currently have available. We have some internal capabilities that we're fleshing out, but nothing released yet for actually emulating an OCU yet.
Okay.
Yeah, but Ken, I think you mentioned you had something like a homegrown emulator.
Yeah. Yes.
That
yeah. We.
Possible
yeah,
for the that, time being.
Yeah. That's right. So I mean, we're definitely open to further discussions around potentially repurposing some an internal R&D capability, because obviously we build a DU emulator, so we need a test peer to run that emulator against, and we have a basically our own internal emulated OCU that fulfills that purpose for validation of our DU emulator. So, but it's not really a product grade solution as of yet.
Yeah, we understand that. Yeah. So Jack, just FYI, we did have a call last night talking a little bit about this integration between DU High and DU Low. And I think we need a separate call on this with Lu Sheng to figure out exactly what the plan is. But it is contingent on, I think, Viavi coming on board. So we need to kind of have that discussion also in parallel.
Well, I think this is a major, goal is to create a functional DU pairing out of these two sub-projects to create a functional DU test apparatus that then other things can be built upon. Full integration with other pieces is probably not, completely within the scope of Bronze, but at least these two pieces should be able to be built and integrated as part of supporting a test apparatus.
So Jack, what do you need to make this proposal to the EC? Will it help you if Viavi gives you a formal final proposal to you and Jinri and the talk so that you guys can discuss it and then, if appropriate, take it to the EC? I'm trying to figure out what is it that you need to make that decision.
Well, so I think there's the first thing I'll ask, is there anybody in the community who has a perspective other than the fact that we need some broader simulator to pull together the integration testing of the software, especially, in the near term, we won't have a whole working system, but even when you have a whole working system, it's hard to have every piece working, and we certainly won't have endpoints without having a simulator. And the question is, it's a long road to building your own simulators. Is there anybody that doesn't agree with the need of finding a simulator partner to help us through this? Of course, it's not only us, it's also the test group, but at least from this community's needs. Is there anybody who has other ideas, concerns, questions about needing are being able to use a partner's simulation platform to help advance our needs?
All right. So that, I mean, for upcoming PoX and Plugfest and other activities in the ON Alliance, it's absolutely essential to state the obvious.
Right. I just don't speak for the whole ORAN Alliance piece, right? So I'm just trying to walk this line and make sure that the ORAN software community is unified around the ask and need and recognizes that. And if there are pieces of the community that don't, it's an opportunity to raise that and get that discussion so that we're doing the right thing, right? I don't want one or two people to push a particular perspective without the broader community weighing in. And, everything doesn't have to be 100% agreed upon, but if we don't have a community that can discuss it, if people have concerns, it's a second step as to who we pick. But the first thing is recognizing the need and the value and its importance to the path that we're on. Is there anybody who has any opinion on any of that would like to speak up, just to make sure, we hear everybody's concern?
Yeah, it's just I've already mentioned the O1, and that's all. The observability is quite important for non-real-time, Rick.
Right, but I think, John, you agree that we need something in this space to advance the project.
Yes, of course. Yeah. Obviously, something is needed for, you know, for pushing on development of the near real time RIC and OCU and those other lower level RAN functions. It's just I'm quite concerned about the SMO and non real time RIC level functions as well. That's all.
Okay. Anyone else?
Yes, this is Alex. So what I wanted to say is that we should keep in mind that in further releases, we might want to have something also in the simulator project, right? For, I mean, really open source and something that the community can use. I'm thinking long term. So we shouldn't lose our focus on there as well.
No, I think the challenge we have right now, Alex, is the simulation project will be a little different in the sense that where we're at right now is the individual components we have don't exist at all in many cases, or very limited capability. And so trying to use a broader simulator to get us to the point where more of the system's working, then the simulator needs for the community will be a little different because you have components that are exercising some of the interfaces. So it's kind of like a chicken and egg. How much do I build, which will eventually become part of other software projects at this point? It can be quite an investment to build out an entire simulator for an OCU. Later on, we'll have a software implementation of an OCU that we can build key simulator functionalities around. So, you know, that's the kind of concern, at least as I read it. Does that make sense?
Yes, Sammy.
Okay. I also view the simulation project to kind of show the value of the whole full end-to-end stack, because simulating very complicated use cases, you know, to show what the real value is of the XApps, I think the simulation project can help tremendously in that. Not just creating open source software kits, but showing the value of traffic sharing, showing the value of, you know, DSS, things like that, in some kind of a large scale emulation or simulation. That has tremendous value in articulating the business value propositions. Eventually, yeah.
Yeah, this is Lucian. Also, I think having simulator, comprehensive and capable simulators is extremely important, especially now we're only at bronze. Many of the functions modules still to be developed or to be completed. This is where the simulator would fill the gap in testing and in some of the even the use cases. With that, but I also want to ask the VRV team, the extensibility of your simulator or emulator, is it possible you can add a certain open source plugin or working together with some open source simulators?
So that's something we haven't looked at in the past. I mean, typically, you know, we deliver these into the large infrastructure manufacturers and operators who are kind of looking like looking for a full turnkey solution. But you know, this sort of is what we're looking at here with the ETU simulator interface is kind of providing an API that you could access. So yeah, you know, from that perspective, I think we don't have a big issue with publishing well-defined APIs into various aspects of the simulator that you could use. Because I mean, we have those APIs between, you know, components of the simulation. So, you know, being able to allow you to connect to some of that, I think is something that we definitely would be open to, you know, exploring which ones you specifically would be interested in, where you think some open source development would help take it maybe in directions that we otherwise wouldn't. That, you know, definitely open to having those conversations.
All right, thank you.
All right, So we're getting close to the end of the hour. So is there anybody that has any items for today that we need to address before we close the meeting? Okay, Farhi.
Jack, I have something, sorry.
Go ahead.
For the E2 simulator, we need a resource that will be able to help us enhance the simulator for the traffic steering use case. So I also sent an email to the community, but nobody reacted until now. So if there are any volunteers that could help us enhance the E2 simulator, please step up.
Yes, this is important. Actually, it touches on a slightly bigger issue for me. Open source projects aren't completely about one company going and building a component completely upon themselves, right? I think we need to continue to promote people of common interests collaborating on some of these components. Now, I don't want to say that it's free form where you have, you entertain every idea in the world, but people who are going to benefit from the E2 interface should get involved with making sure the E2 simulator is there. And someone from the E2 working group should be people who want to get involved. So, we really need to partner as a community on some of these projects to make them move forward. And the simulator is a great area because everyone can derive benefit from it. So please, take a look. Alex said it out again. Please consider figuring out how we can help Alex achieve what he needs to do. Okay? Now.
Okay, thanks.
The last thing I was going to say is, Farheen, is this table here updated with the correct times for the different zones based on?
Yes, I believe it is.
Okay, can you just double check that and send that out onto the email?
Okay.
Just letting people know that based on changes in daylight savings time, at least in the US, here is an updated table so that hopefully next week we can get more people available in this slot.
Okay, will do, Jack.
Hi, Jinri.
I'm sorry, I joined a bit late, but I'm actually on the line most of the time. As far as I know, the DST in Euro will be starting from the end of this month.
Right. We should update the table again at that point in time and keep publishing it. So
yeah.
So if somebody from the European zone can work with Farheen and make sure this table gets updated, that would be great. And
yeah.
So, but Farheen, when we change the table, we do need to publish it on the email site just so everybody knows that changes are occurring.
Sure.
Key question, we stick with 8 a.m. Eastern as the reference time. Everybody else has to adjust.
That's the way we've been doing it. If other people, okay. if people would like to change that, we can certainly adjust. Excuse me, but that's where we've started. I'm happy to take feedback if people need to adjust from that.
And sorry, Jack, just a quick comment on that. Is Eastern time then whatever, current time in New York, is that seen as the base time for all of the other meetings as well, or is it just for this one, or is there a standard way of working across OSC? That's one comment. I have another one in a second.
That's a good question. Does anyone have a preference? Is there any different? Anyone have a better idea?
By the way, so if you are using our groups.io calendar, I believe its reference zone is US, so it would automatically update based on the daylight saving shift. However, it's still using the US time as a reference. So if you, PTLs, if you schedule your meeting on the groups.io calendar, then this week all the meeting notices are sent based on the new daylight saving time, 8 a.m. before 8 a.m. now. Of course, the two other time zones, there may be a 1 hour difference.
Okay, and so Lisheng Dutjin then raises another point, because there are many other calendars that aren't based on the List.io calendar with different home time zones, and people enter. It's actually quite a mess. And I would ask maybe that we could escalate this to Linux Foundation to figure out a proper way of working with calendars in terms of setting the home time, the editor's time, and then the viewed time once you receive these. It's an absolute mess. At the moment, with calendars showing pretty much random time offsets at the moment, and even where calendars are duplicated across the List.io one and then their own calendars in their own projects, it's often conflicting at this stage. And so I would ask, please, can we escalate this to have a proper way of working with calendars, and that the calendars are meant to sync with your own desktop calendar application. For instance, I know that almost none of the calendars that are currently in use in Confluence correctly sync with my Outlook calendaring system. So please, can we either escalate this or put it for discussion maybe in a further meeting? Okay, thank you.
Now, Tristan's not on today, I can see, so we'll bring this up with him. Farheen, can you put that on your list of action items? Now, Martin, is that, no, sorry, John, is that across all Linux Foundation projects, or just uniquely you find that with this project?
Yeah, I find it actually across all projects, but well, I'm here in this project, so
that's fine. I'm just trying to find out how bad we are, right? if we're worse than everybody else, and why, or if we're, you know, if we're enjoying the common benefit of the poor performance across other projects, then. You know, I'm just trying to understand how to approach the addressing the issue.
Yeah, I think it's the same across all projects, but if anything, I think OSC is maybe worse. Okay, thank you.
Okay, we'll take a hard look at that. All right, with that, I'm going to call an end to the TSC meeting, and I will, Lijing, you're having a follow-up meeting, right? Your integration.
Yes.